tell you that.
I finally... I missed the CDs. You know why? I'll tell you why. Hold on a sec. There we go. I finally get to meet Harry Manx. If we had not agreed to meet at Memphis Blues Barbecue on Commercial in Vancouver, he and I would be just phone pals for the rest of our lives. But he's in town. I'm in town. We both know where Memphis Blues Barbecue House is on Commercial. What the heck? Let's meet there. Table number one. Hi, Harry.
Hi, David. Thanks for, Terry, thanks for having me on the show. Sorry, I messed it up.
No, that's fine. The last time I was here, just down where that gentleman is sitting, I did an interview with, I've got to think about this, big guy, Maritimes.
Oh, Matt Anderson.
Matt Anderson was sitting just over there, and we talked about, now my question to him was, the walls of this place are covered with blues legends from one to the other, most of them in black and white. How much of your life is tied up in the blues?
Well, for me, I've always loved the blues. In fact, when I was a kid, I got in the music business in Toronto at 15, and by the time I was 18, I was a soundman at the Alma Combo Club, which is our famous blues, one of our famous blues clubs in, at that time in Canada. And I got a full exposure to the blues and what the artists were like off stage and on stage and their whole shtick. It took me by storm. I fell in love with the whole blues thing at that moment.
Were you in there before or after the Stones?
I was in before, unfortunately. Yeah, I missed that. I heard about it.
Who did you get to see on that stage? Who made an impression?
Willie Dixon was fantastic. I'd seen Muddy Waters down at the Lecoq d'Or on Yonge Street, and I'd seen Buddy Guy, Junior Wells at the Lecoq d'Or, but Willie Dixon was a real standout. He was a huge guy, and in fact, it was because of Willie that I lost my gig there because I was so enthralled with the music that the sound was terrible. He complained, and next day I was fired. But I loved him anyways, and I learned his music right away. I started learning his music.
Were you playing then?
I was just sort of dabbling. I didn't learn any licks from watching these guys. What I learned was something about the feel, the approach, the attitude. I got some of that from him, but I hadn't yet started to play very seriously. It was about that time that I started to really get serious about it.
I became aware of the space between the notes just about the time of Miles Davis's Kind of Blue.
Yeah, exactly.
How about you?
Yes, you know, we had the Colonial Tavern on Yonge Street, which if you were, had any interest at all in jazz, you would see the greatest jazz players there. And I got my education there listening to some of those guys. Not inside. I didn't have much money. I'd stand outside on the Yonge Street. You could hear fine. They had a speaker on the street, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, I started to understand what the feeling was of the of that music. And though I didn't know how to play it, I sort of got the groove from it.
How many albums, 20 Strings and the Truth, how many albums now?
14 in 14 years.
What is it that somebody, I noticed that there was a comment, somebody said he's constantly in the studio, he's constantly recording and constantly releasing albums. What is it that drives you on that end?
But it's not. It's actually not true. I never go in the studio. You know, I made my first record in 11 hours, the second one in 2 days. I just go in and bang them out. I write the songs on the road. I think about, I can't even say that I try to write songs. You know, I have songs in my head, and I got to write them down just to get them out.
Is there a song on this album where you know the shape of it, and you kind of have the tempo? Do you then, is it all just off the top of your head riff?
No, you know, there's songs that I have on this new CD are, a lot of them are grooves which I've modified ragas. They're modified ragas, means I learned the original raga and the rules of the raga, and then I sort of bent it into the shape of a song, a Western song. And so a lot of them are like that. A song called Into the Unknown on the new CD, I play the drums on there and the guitar because I had two drummers come and play and it wasn't happening. So I said, get out of my way, let me do this. And I put it down. So yeah, I can feel the songs rhythmically and harmonically.
Would the person who played that original raga or wrote it or made it part of their repertoire, would they recognize it?
Totally. The ragas that I do play all come from Vishwa Mohan Bhat, my teacher in India. And he got them directly from Ravi Shankar, his teacher. So they are actual pieces, and they're melodies, and I use them in like a song, "Death Have Mercy," which is an old a cappella song. I put Rog Jog in there, which is a very bluesy, late night, dark, evil rog. You don't play it, but at 3 a.m. So I put that in. It has the feeling of death.
What about Blues Walk? Where is that pulled from?
Blues Walk was, you know, it's a shuffle, and it's your standard shuffle. It's a kind of a feel about blues, and my idea was, you know, there's so much rhythm in people walking down the street that I gave that shuffle a name, and that was called Blues Walk.
A couple of tracks I want to ask you about. Bob Marley's Waiting in Vain, you did the vocal.
Yes. You know, I've always loved the song, and though I don't play reggae grooves per se, I love the feel of that song and the sentiment, so I made it a kind of a slower, softer love song, and I really tried to give it that romantic spin, because it's a beautiful tune and it's a beautiful sentiment, and it can't go unnoticed.
The legacy that Bob Marley left is quite remarkable.
Totally, and that's what makes it a little difficult to mess with his stuff, with his songs. You have to do it with great care and love, because you're not going to do it like he did it, but you can do it your own way, and that's what I try to do.
How many times did you run that through before you were happy with what you had?
You know what? That's a live recording right off the floor. So there you go.
Tell me about the little notation, Van Morrison's Crazy Love. It says the wedding version.
You know, I've had at least a dozen people told me they've been married to my version of Crazy Love, me singing it. And in fact, I got hired once to go all the way to Hawaii to play that one song at a wedding. Yeah, people like Crazy Love for getting married. It's the ultimate get hitched tune. So I did a version without words. And it's pretty. It's just pretty. It's probably appropriate for that situation.
Have you ever done Sleepwalk?
Well, I've played Sleepwalk once live with two fellows, good friends. One was named Valdi. The other is named Bill Henderson from Chilliwack. The three of us played it, and that's the only time. I think Bill played the lead on the lap slide, though he doesn't play much lap. He played very well that day. I played the rhythm, I think.
Did you give the group a name?
You know what it was? It was a fundraiser. We'll do that on Salt Spring. You know, if there's a good cause, sure. Everybody's out there. You know, we do that.
Yeah, you had a gig recently in Hawaii, and I kind of wonder if you're listening to the Slack Key guys over there.
Yeah, I know a few of them from festivals here in Canada, and they're great players. It's basically it's open tunings with a very original approach to songwriting or song creation. It's something that's in their blood. It's not, I can't really relate to it. I mean, it sounds pretty, but I couldn't think of myself playing it.
The name of the album is 20 Strings and the Truth. Harry Manx is our guest, and we're at the Memphis Blues Barbecue House on Commercial in Vancouver. Now, Park Heffelfinger, who is a brilliant wine mind, came over and started to talk to you about India. So just relate a little bit of your side of that dialogue about where you were and people that you've met and just your impressions of India.
Yeah, I first went to India in 79 to have a look around. I stayed a year. I wandered around. I arrived with $10. I managed to stay a year. I begged, borrowed, didn't steal, but came close. So I got the feel of the place from the ground level, and I decided I'd get my act together and come back and stay a while. So I went back in 86, and I pretty much stayed there until 98. I used to go off to Japan to make my money here and there, playing on the street. But in the beginning, I lived in an ashram in Pune, and I played in the band, and I played for the meditators, and that was my lifestyle.
What were you seeking?
Well, you know, like all people that seek in the spiritual world, they seek consciousness, awareness, understanding of themselves, and hence the world. So I've always been on that path. The music has helped me to kind of get along that path, really, you know. And I think my music, to some degree, reflects that.
How spiritual are you?
Well, I am deeply spiritual, but it's nothing that I've spoke to anyone about, because it's... it's hard to speak about it. There's not words always for those kind of experiences.
But you know how important it is. It's the fabric of your music.
Yes, that's right. I think people hear my spirituality through the music. I try to put that into the music. I try to cloak some ideas, some messages maybe in the storyline. And people hear it. They come to me all the time and they have tears in their eyes. They hear what I'm saying. The less I say about it, the more they understand too.
Just hearing Miles Davis over in the corner.
Yeah.
What's your prep before you go on stage? What do you do?
Well, some things I can't mention on air, but but no, really, I like to get just chilled out and be present and not be overexcited, because excitement gets in the way of what I do. I like to draw the people into something. Something comforting, something soft, something gentle, a little rest from the everyday life. I like to draw them into that. And that's so I have to find myself in that space, on the stage, and maybe even before, where I'm focused, I'm present, and I do my thing. And the more I get into it, the more they'll follow me there. And that's my journey.
I don't know if you're going to answer this question because you're too damn humble. The niche that you've carved out, the friendships that you've gathered, the places you've been, the stages you've been on, the rapture that you've been able to create, all of this, does it bring you joy? Does it have a certain responsibility?
Yes, you know, the thing about being an artist with some degree of success is every album requires one to follow it, you know. There's no getting off the wheel, you know, and you have to go out and service your public's needs and etc. So there's no getting off that. If you go into that joyfully, you're on the right path, as I am, you know. And here I came to Canada at 46. I'd seen a lot before I started this journey. So this is all a bit of a downhill coast for me at this point. It's lovely. I'm grateful. I don't take any of it for granted, and I'm glad that my music finds a place to stick to, you know.
Did you think you'd never find that audience?
I came over here with the idea that I was going to play my Veena in Indian restaurants or on the street or something, you know. I had no ambitions about a successful career. I had always been a street musician most of my life, so I thought that was my market, but... You know, people, when I started playing on Robson Street in 2000, people came along and said, no, you should get a gig, man. You're happening. So I started to think about that, and I made my first record, and that became Blues Album of the Year. So I was feeling good. I thought, okay, I'm on the right track now.
Summertime came as a complete and total surprise to me. Where the hell did that come from?
That's a raga called Gujari Todi. Gujari Todi is a heavy raga. It's really deep. It's powerful. It's in your face. And so we start the song with that, but then it drops into summertime. I guess it's because what I really try to do with music is this big mashup of Indian classical and blues and... maybe I force the relationship sometimes. Maybe that song is an example, but I love the experiment.
Was it Clapton that went diddle diddle?
Yeah, that's right.
In the front of Layla?
That's right. Yeah, it's very close to that. Those notes
very
I'm playing.
Close.
Yeah, the thing about that raga, which gives it a lot of tension, is there's a lot of notes right beside each other. Now, anyone who's a musician knows that the best thing for harmony is a little space between the notes, but. That has a lot of notes beside each other, and that gives a bit slightly off sound, which in our mind gives us a kind of attention to the song.
You've probably been asked this before, but I'm dying to know the answer. Guitarists that have caught your attention thought, that's original, that's different, that's very good.
Oh, yeah. You know, well, first of all, the Indian guitarists, the slide guitarists, of course, they knocked me right over. Vishwa Mohan Bhatt, you know, Debashish Bhattacharya, Bridge Bhujangkabra, they're all great. They're fantastic players. But there's Western players, too. You know, I met Kelly Joe Phelps when he was a street musician. We got along well because we both play the same style of lap slide. He impressed me very much. A friend of Jerry Douglas, who's a great dobro player. He's really good. I gave him one of my Vinas. He was happy to have that. I'm not sure he learned how to play it, but I'm sure it looks good on the wall at home. You know, I'm always impressed with musicians, most musicians, because they'll always know something I don't know. I can watch them and I go, oh, that's a nice lick. I don't know that one. I wouldn't mind learning.
How about the blues cats? Any of the blues guys?
Yeah, I love a lot of the great blues players. And, of course, there's so many. We have a lot of the good ones right here in Canada. A band out of Ottawa, Monkey Junk, Steve Mariner. What a great blues musician he is. He's a young guy. He can play any instrument. But he sort of seems to contain all the history of blues in his playing, too. He doesn't just play on the surface. He can play way down deep. There's a lot of these young guys. They've learned the art. You don't know where they got it from because they didn't do any hard living, drinking sort of lifestyle. But they owned the style of music by learning it. So they're qualified to play it.
Explain the 20 strings, will you, for the audience?
The title? Well, 20 strings is how many strings is on the Mohan Veena. It's a guitar-like instrument, but it has two layers of strings, two levels, a top and a lower level that run parallel, and much like the sitar. So I play it with a slide bar in the lap, and it's a very unique instrument, not very old. It was created about 25 years ago in India.
What do you use for a slide?
I use, what's it called? I bet the old guy that makes that stuff, Seymour Duncan, Lap Dog, I think it's called, or some a slide. I met him, you know, I toured for 2 years in the U.S. with Richie Havens. I was his opening act, I played on his records and stuff. And I remember Seymour Duncan came, that guy came to the show and introduced himself.
Did Richie teach you rhythm?
He did, and he taught me how to use my thumb to play too, because we play in the same tuning. That was happening long before we met, and when I met him I realized I could understand everything he was playing because we were in the same tuning.
Didn't he come over the top with his thumb?
He came over with the thumb on the top. He used his thumb was so long he could wrap it around the instrument. I use that now and as part of my technique, mostly just to remind me of what a joyful fellow Richie was. He was a lovely guy. I had some wonderful moments with him, and it was a real big loss for me when he passed because I felt I really had lost a friend there.
Mixed Bag is the name of the album. Find Mixed Bag Richie Havens. Harry Manx has joined us here in the studio, being Memphis Blues Barbecue House on Commercial in Vancouver. A couple more questions and we'll let him go. Let me take you back to Into the Unknown. No. One of the titles I didn't even write down because I knew I wanted to ask it. And you've used the term two or three times in conversation with Park Heffelfinger. At your feet. Tell me about At Your Feet.
Yes, At Your Feet is, in India, to touch someone's feet is a great honor. For you and for the person to receive, it's probably easier for you, the one doing it, than the one receiving. But I learned with my teacher in India that I was so overwhelmed with gratefulness. When I would see him, I would naturally do that. And it became something special for me that I saw the depth of that. He would, likewise, he would touch his mother's feet, who was 95. Here he was, you know, the world's greatest player and just a lovely person. So At Your Feet is about surrendering your ego, and that's what it relates to. That's the moment when you bow down.
What do your teachers, your mentors, think of the music that you're making?
Well, you know, I don't know what they would think. I'm sure Vishwa, he loves that I've found my own thing. You know, that I'm not trying to be him. That I'm not trying to be an Indian musician, because even kids can play deeper ragas there than I'll ever be able to play. It's in their blood. But he's happy I found my own thing. And, you know, some of my friends from the spiritual world, they play more classical music and New Age, and they don't quite get where I fall into the blues, why, and they don't understand that world. Fair enough. From my perspective, the blues is very spiritual music.
Yeah.
It always has been, and there's no gap there for me.
There's a more of a connection, as I understand it, between African folk music, guitar music, and what we hear the blues even today,
yes,
as opposed to, you know, Indian.
Yes.
But it's a close cousin.
Yes, that's right. You know, you can say the roots of the blues is definitely in Africa. And like Indian music, they're both very old styles, so they have very deep roots. And that's apparent when you hear either style of music. You know, you go, oh, there's something deep there. You know, you start tapping your foot, or if it's Indian music, you're off on another planet right away. Yeah, great styles of music. And in the end, though, you know, I still write my own stuff. What I do is I take the blues and the Indian, and I use that to inform my own writing. So it has some basis in something solid.
I remember asking Carlos Santana once, where do you go when you solo, Carlos? He said, my mom asked me the same question. I don't quite know.
Well, you know, the great thing about that is he does go somewhere, that he abandons his mind, his ego. He's just gone. He's lost in the music. And that's really where you have to go, you know, all of us. You can't be looking around if you're looking good, if they're watching you, blah, blah. No, you have to lose yourself in it. And then people will be right behind you, following you right there.
What does that feel like?
That feels like presence. That feels like perfect, this moment. That's what it feels like. No mind. That's the place. You know, music is the soundtrack for people, and they keep telling me that it's a soundtrack for my relaxation moments. A soundtrack for my drive home. It's, you know, I'm happy to be able to provide some music that does bring some comfort to people. I'm hoping it does.
Do you know what the future looks like? Do you have certain projects that you have? Have you got a bucket list?
No, I've lived a pretty full life. I don't have many regrets or many things I have yet to do. I'm happy to kind of continue in my direction here, playing music and see what comes. You know,
how about you in strings? How about you in an orchestra?
That would be good. You know, me in front of an orchestra, that's fine. Yeah, I would love to do that. I got to get somebody to chart some of my stuff and then and do that. That's definitely possible. I've been writing lately. I started writing something some years ago, a letter to my son, because I sometimes had doubts that I'd be around when he was old enough to need the information, so I started jotting it all down, and that sort of turned into a writing for me, talking about my experiences, talking about my ideas about the world and how to find your way, and philosophy on music, things like this.
I know you're comfortable on the road, but where's home?
Home is a little island on the west coast of Canada, Salt Spring Island, home of all the misfits, and yeah. I fit in perfectly there.
The jams must be really good.
It has some good jams, and when there's a good cause, we're all out at the local hall with a guitar in hand, doing our best to drum up some funds for whoever's in need.
There's a studio right downtown, right opposite Barb's.
That's
with
true.
The best pies in the city.
That's true.
Is that one of the places you record?
Well, you know, I did actually my first three records at Randy Backman's studio when he was still there up on the north end of the island. But now I record in a little garage in back of a guy's house in Victoria, B.C. He's a great engineer. He doesn't need much to make my records. He's a fine fellow. And I go there once a year. We pretty much have an appointment. I pop in, bang off a few tunes, and then we move on.
Can you remember, can you define one single moment of clarity that you went, this is my finest moment? Was there one in particular on stage?
Well, yeah, there's been some great moments, and I guess, you know, the one time when I got invited to play the New York City Guitar Festival, I went there, and I looked down, and I saw Bruce Springsteen sitting in the front row.
And you were playing?
I was playing one of his songs.
One of his songs. I'm on fire.
It was bad idea, man. No, I had to play his songs. But I felt really scared and unsure about it. But when he came backstage and shook my hand and told me, hey, I learned something new watching you play that, I think that might have been one of my finer moments.
Thank you for this music. Thank you for your time at CKUA, who love you dearly.
Thanks, Terry. That's great, man. I appreciate so much what CKUA does for artists that don't fit in the commercial roster. They're a great station. Good luck on them.
Thank you, Harry. Cool. You have a website you want to send people to?
Yeah, ericclapton.com. HarryManx.com. Check me out.
Thank you. 20 Strings and the Truth. It's Harry Manx. Finally, we get a chance to talk. This is Mulligan Stew, CKUA.